evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Tuesday, May 21st, 2024. Political parties in South Sudan have a reason to smile.
Political parties which were registered from 2014 up to 2018 were registered in accordance with the regulation of 2015. And that regulation is the one providing for the 20,000 South Sudan pounds as a registration fee.
And some South Sudanese political groups are struggling to be recognized by the mediator of the talks in Nairobi.
My party is not a bedroom party. We started long time ago. It has been 8 years already. It is not an online party.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Minister of Justice, Ruben Adol-Arol, has nullified the registration fees of $75,000 for political parties aspiring to participate in the December 2024 general election. Gabriel Kwot Agokdeng threatened to sue the government of South Sudan at the East African Court of Justice in Arusha, accusing the Kiir's administration for allegedly blocking political parties that are warming up to participate in the December elections. Deng says South Sudan's political parties council should respect the laws of South Sudan.
My response to the decision being made by the Justice Minister to revoke the registration fees for the political parties is welcome at my capacity as a legal representative of the 14 political parties, which were blocked out intentionally by the Political Parties Council by imposing an exorbitant registration fees.
And when such opinions are expressed by the top lawyer or the top legal officer in the country, what should happen? I mean, what should happen now?
What should happen is that this is the decision of the minister must be implemented by the chairperson of the Political Parties Council by starting registering the political parties, seeking for registration in accordance with the Political Parties Council or Political Parties Regulation of 2015, since the 24th is still under amendment. So I expect the chairperson of the Political Parties Council to immediately start by implementing the ministerial legal opinion to register political parties seeking for registration. Since the issue of these dollars has been declared null and void,
with the nullification of the $75,000 for both provisional and registration, a provisional license and registration, how much are the political parties going to pay now for registration?
20,000 was provided under the Political Parties Regulation of 2015, including 14 political parties which were registered from 2014 up to 2018 were registered in accordance with the regulation of 2015. And that regulation is the one providing for the 20,000 South Sudan pounds as a registration fees. Therefore, if it is now declared by the minister that this regulation of 2015 is still in force until the amendment is made, simply what is in that regulation is 20,000.
If these amendments are done for 2024 on the Political Parties Act or Political Councils Act regarding registration, what are the guarantees that they will not come back to the $75,000? I mean, is there any indication that they will change the figures to $75,000 as opposed to 20,000 South Sudanese pounds?
Since that regulation is not now in force, the amendment is still under process, so it will not be taken back. And that is what we call the principle of non-retrospectivity. What is to be done like today must be done in accordance with the provisions of the 2015 regulation. So what is going to come next is not important to be discussed as of now. We are now considering the enforcement of 2015 regulation, and anything that may arise in 2024 regulation may have a different avenue to address when there is irregularities in that particular regulation of 2024. So far, the regulation is not yet in signed into regulation, and so there is no need for us to waste time discussing on it. Let's focus on what is lawful, and that's all.
And talking about laws, you were giving conditions here that if the political parties council did not respond to the opinion, the legal opinion of the Minister of Justice, you will be forced to continue with your process at the East African Court of Justice. Is that correct?
Of course. I think the ministerial legal opinion should be respected by the chairperson, because it is the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs that represents any government institution in case the government institution is dragged to court. So if they are not going to respect the legal opinion from the minister, meaning that they will have no one even to defend them before the East African Court of Justice, because the Minister of Justice is a government attorney general, is a government lawyer who is qualified and authorized under Article 135 to represent government in any case against the government or institution of the government. So this legal opinion should be respected. Should they fail, even the minister himself will not accept to represent something which is unlawful before the court. It will be a waste of time to them. But for my case, I'm ready to make sure the rights provided under the Constitution and the other relevant laws in force in South Sudan are respected, and that the interests of my parties, of my client, which are the political parties, must be respected. Justice must prevail. We are not against anyone, but the rule of law must be respected. Lastly, I would like to once again appreciate the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs for making a precedent and a hard decision to be made, because in the current government, if you make a right decision, you may face dismissal. But he was brave enough to respect the professionalism by providing the right legal opinion.
That's Gabriel Kwart Agok Deng, a lawyer representing 14 political parties in South Sudan. He spoke with me from Juba earlier today. Still on political issues, more South Sudanese in the diaspora are struggling to be recognized as the country prepares for elections scheduled for 2024. Joseph Mokwer Nyet, who says he's one of the Sudan's lost boys and the chairman of Patriotic People's Party, says he wants to be part of the just concluded talks held in Nairobi, Kenya, aimed at bringing on board political parties who refused to sign the 2018 peace agreement. Nyet says the mediator of the talks should include his group in the search for peace in South Sudan.
Why I'm not happy for the peace that is going on in Nairobi is that the mediators and the government are very decisive of who to attend the meeting, because they have not invited the whole opposition, which are the holdout group.
To the best of my knowledge, all the holdout groups were invited, including the National Salvation Front. A faction of National Salvation Front responded by going to Nairobi, but the main group did not. And I don't know which other holdout groups are you talking about.
The holdout group that I'm talking about, we have the South Sudan Democratic Alliance. South Sudan Democratic Alliance was comprising of 27 political groups. However, the Real SPLM and the South Sudan United Front, they declined their signatures. So the South Sudan United Front and Real SPLM, refused. They did not want to be a part of that.
The groups that the mediator, General Lazarus Simbeo, invited, these are groups that have membership. They have following. If I can remember very well, and if I can, you know, put you to task, the Patriotic People's Party is not a registered entity in South Sudan. It has no presence on the ground. I mean, I travel to and from South Sudan. Your party is just like the Kush Democratic Majority Party. which operates from a bedroom in U.S. How would you say you should be included? I mean, this is a serious talk.
Well, yeah, my party is not a bedroom party. We started long time ago. It has been 8 years already. It is not an online party. And also, let me say this. I don't know whether you look on the those boards that are being run online. You have seen my name is ranking. So I don't know why you say you don't know Joseph Nyet as one of the leader of the political party.
There are 14 political parties that have been identified in South Sudan by the Political Parties Council as legitimate entities that will be participating in the upcoming election. Do you know why your Patriotic People's Party is not on the list?
The PPC, which is the party, I mean, the PPC resolution is not right. You know that there are 64 political parties that are actually on the list. I received the document from them, and it is comprising of 64 parties, and they say that 14 are registered, are the one that they confirm. But we here, we are the all-out parties, just like the one of the Real Asylum and the SSUF. So we are the same group, but we are outside.
So also Denise, who will challenge you to say, come and show us where the headquarters of your party is in Juba. How would you react to them? Come and show us where the headquarters of your party is in Juba.
Let me tell you something. Some of these parties, when FLMIO was not in Juba in the first place, they were not having office, right? Why? Because of insecurity. Some of the political parties have no offices in Juba because of insecurity. But if we have agreement and the government accept to allow the free and fair movement for the politician, then why not? We'll have an office there in Juba. But we have members as we speak.
And how many are we talking about? Five people, three, two, one?
Okay, according to the list that we have and the numbers of the youth, we are about probably about 5,000 or more.
That is just in Juba?
That is entirely in Juba, and some of them may be in East Africa. We have the names.
If you look at the conditions for registration, one major condition is that any political entity that would like to participate in the upcoming elections must have 500 members in each of the 10 states. You're only saying you have 5,000 in Juba, and is that going to really help you?
Let me tell you this. We have enough more than that. These are just members that we have the names, but if we are on the ground, you will see the large number that is coming up and actually participate and support the PPP in election, if there is ever the election in South Sudan. So, but here, the problem here, the PPC is not being honest.
Joseph, you are the captain of the ship. Everyone listening to us would expect you to be in Juba where the other parties are. Why are you in Washington?
The reason why I'm here is because we are a part of the whole out group. We're ending up to be a part of the whole out group. And if we are a part of the whole out group, there is a process. And the process is a transition where there is a peace resolution to be done somewhere. And then we ending up in Juba.
You are trying to negotiate your way back to Juba through peace deal. But what is happening in Nairobi is only for those who are recognized, or if you like, those who are formidable force on the ground. You are by yourself in Washington here. How would you expect to be included in a serious discussion to end the crisis in South Sudan?
I am here in U.S., but some of my delegation are there, are in Addis Ababa, and some of them are even in Kenya. But the reason why they did not show up is because we were not invited. We sent email to the mediators. I asked Gerald Pagan, and Pagan actually gave me the information, and I was able to email them like a week earlier before they called for the meeting, and they have not replied to me. So right here, we are not the problem. We want to join the peace talk.
That's Joseph Makwer Nyet, who says he's one of the Sudan's lost boys and the chairman of the Patriotic People's Party. He spoke to me from the United States earlier today. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, families living near South Sudan's oil fields cry for help. Stay tuned for that story after the break. Some residents living in Faluj and Melut of South Sudan's Upper Nile State say they are experiencing numerous challenges due to oil production in the area. They report losing generations of children born with deformities and blindness, poor food production and delayed rainfall. As Mamel Quot reports for VOA from Malakal, they are calling for immediate help from the government of South Sudan.
Dinar Nyok says when she became pregnant last year, she experienced paralysis. She says she was unable to feed herself or walk until the day she delivered the baby, who appeared well-formed but cried incessantly and passed waste through the mouth. She says the baby was taken for a scan and found to have inverted intestines. Despite plans for surgery, the baby did not survive. She says doctors attributed the issue to an infection but were not able to confirm if it was related to oil production in the area.
Since this baby was conceived, I have not been comfortable. I have been falling sick repeatedly. When I was 8 months pregnant, I got paralyzed from my waist down to my feet. I had been assisted to drink water and eat food. When I went to the hospital, I was told it was infection. I took medicine, but it did not get better.
Dinar's stepmother, Nyan Weng Thon, says Dinar's health has not improved since delivering the deformed baby. She complains of backaches and pale hands and feet and fears her condition is not improving.
She has not been healthy since she delivered that deformed baby. After she lost the baby, it weakened her entire body. When she felt better, her build did not return to normal, like she does not have enough blood.
She says this has never happened in their family before. Monjok Gi, Director for Environment and Forestry in Melut County, says the atmosphere is not conducive for people or farming. He says food production has dropped since oil production started in the area. Gi urges the government to ensure that oil production waste covering a vast area of land is controlled and is not absorbed into the soil or air. He says this stagnant water contributes to air pollution and may be delaying this year's rainfall.
The government is responsible for the atmosphere. It is supposed to treat water that comes out from oil production or channel it down. And the gas should not be released into the atmosphere, but rather burned. Now the rain does not rain the way it should. Rains are supposed to start in May, but now it has not started. If there is someone who can help us, that person should help control this stagnant oil production water to ensure that it goes down.
Gi encourages each household to plant a tree to alleviate air pollution and calls for people to be sensitized about the impacts of oil production and move to safer areas. Joel Munjok, Director of Administration and Finance at Upper Nile State's Ministry of Environment and Forestry, says the government has planned to relocate people to New Paluj, a one-hour drive from Old Paluj, to keep them safe from the effects of oil production. He says water from the oil production, when it evaporates, can cause serious health conditions. Last year, the national government convened a conference on the status of oil production and the 5% oil revenue share to oil-producing states. The government and stakeholders resolved to carry out an environmental audit to understand the impacts of oil production. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwad, reporting from Malakal, Upper Nile State.
From Malakal, we move back to Washington, where Kenyan President William Ruto is in the United States this week, and on Thursday begins a state visit with President Joe Biden here in Washington. The White House says it chose Kenya for its first state visit for an African leader for many reasons, not least because the East African powerhouse has stepped up on the global stage, offering to staff a United Nations peacekeeping mission to Haiti that could see boost on the ground as early as this week. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell recently sat down with Francis Brown, the Director for African Affairs at the National Security Council, ahead of Ruto's visit. In this excerpt, Brown begins by explaining the importance of the White House, the importance White House places on the visit.
Yeah, we're really excited about the state visit. As you know, this is President Biden's first African leader that he's hosting. It's actually the first state visit since 2008 for an African leader, so it is historic. We chose Kenya for a few reasons. Number one is the Kenya-U.S. partnership has really grown from a regionally focused one to a globally focused one. So we've been really pleased the way the Kenyans have stepped up to play leadership beyond their region. And we see a lot of complementarities in terms of what we're trying to do on climate, what we're trying to do on debt for the developing world, on security issues. So there's a lot to celebrate in the growth of that relationship. The second reason we wanted to have this state visit with Kenya is that we are both democracies, and our bond is very deep as democracies, and our bond is very deep on people-to-people ties. So there's a lot there in terms of the relationship. The third reason we wanted to have Kenya as our state visit, our first state visit from Africa this term, is that Kenya and the U.S. really work similarly in terms of bringing in the private sector to solve global challenges. So we'll be talking a lot about those. The deliverables you'll see are in the realms of technology, of clean energy, climate transition, of debt relief, of democracy, of people-to-people ties, and on health-related issues. So there's a lot to look for on that one.
So speaking of security agreements between the U.S. and Kenya, one issue on the table is that Kenya hopes to soon have peacekeepers in Haiti. First of all, why is this so important to the administration? What do you think the value of having Kenyan peacekeepers in Haiti is? And secondly, can you tell us about any other security agreements these two countries might come up with during the state visit?
We do really welcome the Kenyans raising their hand to help lead this multinational security support mission in Haiti, because it's kind of an example of what I just mentioned, of Kenya raising its hand to solve problems even outside of its region. So we really view this as a positive thing. We've been working really closely with them. As you may know, there's been planning underway for a number of months. It's included policing experts from around the world working to develop a concept of operations. Kenya's not going it alone. The U.S. has provided $300 million towards this. So it's a big thing for us. In terms of other security-related deliverables we can look ahead to, I don't want to preview specifically the state visit, but I would say watch this space, because I think security cooperation with Kenya is a really important plan.
What is that going to be focused on? Is it going to be focused on threats from Somalia or from other parts of East Africa?
So the U.S. and Kenya have long cooperated on Somalia. I think you can look for security-related announcements that go beyond that.
That was Francis Brown, the Director of African Affairs at the White House National Security Council. She was speaking with VOA correspondent Anita Powell. We apologize for the quality of that audio. The deaths of Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi and Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullah Khan in a helicopter crash sparked reaction from world leaders Monday. Heads of state from Pakistan, Russia, and Lebanon remembered Raisi as a respected leader, while the United States acknowledged his troubled human rights record. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
5 days of national mourning as Iranians mark the deaths of President Ebrahim Raisi and Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian in a helicopter crash Sunday. The United States expressed its official condolences for the deaths, but acknowledged Raisi's role in human rights abuses, including the extrajudicial killing of political prisoners in 1988. Matthew Miller is the spokesperson for the U.S. State Department.
we regret any loss of life. We don't want to see anyone die in a helicopter crash. But that doesn't change the reality of his record, both as a judge and as the president of Iran, the fact that he has blood on his hands.
Iran's vice president, Mohammad Mokhber, now serving as acting president, said the deaths would not cause domestic unrest. But Iranians in exile celebrated Monday, saying this could be a moment of change. Javad Dabrayan, the spokesperson for the National Council of Resistance of Iran, says this is definitely an encouragement for the people in Iran who have also been protesting until now, and it will definitely bring the resistance in Iran a big step forward.
This is definitely an encouragement for the people in Iran who have also been protesting until now. It will definitely bring the resistance in Iran a big step forward.
One analyst told VOA that Raisi's death would likely not have a significant impact on U.S.-Iran relations. Alex Vitanka is the Iran program director at the Middle East Institute.
In the context of Iran and the Islamic Republic, on those very key issues, and U.S.-Iran relations is one of them, he was not the most important of voices. That is an issue that Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, keeps very much to himself.
Elsewhere in the world, leaders mourned Raisi. Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan says he would like to express deep sorrow for this tragic accident.
I would like to express the deep sorrow we feel for this tragic accident.
Pakistan observed a day of mourning in Raisi's honor. Pakistani Foreign Minister Ishaq Dar says it is a very sad day for the Islamic holy community.
It is a very sad day for the Islamic Ummah. We are all very sad, and so are the Muslims in the in the great country of Turkey, Pakistan, and Islamic Ummah.
Russian state television anchor Daria Kozlova shared a tribute to Raisi from President Vladimir Putin, saying that Putin noted that Raisi had been an outstanding politician and, as a true friend of Russia, made an invaluable personal contribution to development of good neighborly relations between the two countries and made great efforts to bring them to the level of strategic partnership.
The Russian leader noted that Raisi had been an outstanding politician and, as a true friend of Russia, made an invaluable personal contribution to development of good neighborly relations between our countries and made great efforts to bring them to the level of strategic partnership.
And the Chinese foreign ministry said Raisi had played a key role in the alliance between China and Iran. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbing says President Raisi made significant contributions to maintaining Iran's security and stability and promoting the country's development and prosperity. He also made active efforts to strengthen and develop the comprehensive strategic partnership between China and Iran.
President Raisi made significant contributions to maintaining Iran's security and stability and promoting the country's development and prosperity. He also made active efforts to strengthen and develop the comprehensive strategic partnership between China and Iran.
Iran will hold elections within 50 days to elect a permanent president. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, May 21st, 2024. We now leave you with some Rababa group from Sudan's Blue Nile State. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Cornelius, we wish you a good evening. And remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.